Now on Mix 92.6, more from our series on mental health and well-being. This week, our resident counsellor, Carol Salter, joins us to talk about a difficult topic that some of you may find upsetting. We're talking about self-harm. So, Carol, thank you very much once again for joining us this evening.
No, thank you, Andy.
This is a potentially very difficult topic, but, I mean, let's start with some basics. When people say self-harm, what do they actually mean?
Well, I think the one that we always assume with self-harm is cutting, where someone is cutting themselves. But it could be over or under-eating, scratching our skin, burning our skin. It could also be things like misuse of alcohol and drugs. That's another form of self-harm. And also things like getting into fights where you know that you're going to come off worse, which is something that people would never assume that that is classed as a form of self-harm.
No, you've absolutely astonished me there.
Yeah. It's just knowing that you're not going to come out of this in a good way. And it's just, yeah. And yeah, so it, that comes under the self-harm sort of banner. But generally, everyone will say it. They see when they hear of self-harm, they think that it's where you're cutting yourself.
And is this men or women, or is that irrelevant with this?
It's everybody, and it's all ages. Again, we assume that it's going to be sort of the teenagers, you know, sort of 13, 14, upwards. But in actual fact, there's grown men, women, you know, grandparents that do exactly that. You know, they are either using some form of self-harm, you know, the ones we've just mentioned. So it can affect anybody at any age.
So why are people doing this? Because I think there may be an assumption that it's attention seeking, and I'm not so sure that's the case.
Yeah, that is one of the myths of when you hear self-harm, people go, it automatically would sort of say, oh, well, they're just attention seeking, that, you know, but in actual fact, that is not the case at all. Another myth is actually only girls self-harm, which again is not the case at all, because it is, you know, all, you know, male and female. But the reason, well, it people self-harm because there's, They're feeling a personal distress of some sort, and it's become overwhelming, and they've got no control over it. And the only way they get control is by doing self-harm. And by having that self, by cutting themselves, let's take a cutting as you know, the thing they're doing at the moment. But by cutting themselves, it actually gives them some release from that overwhelming problem or coping strategy that they're trying to deal with.
Right.
And it's amazing how our body just uses that as a way of a form of release, really.
And I mean, are people doing this more than once?
Yeah. Generally, they continue to self-harm until the underlying problem has been sorted, or until they have learnt some coping strategies. So like I said, generally, until we find, till you get to the bottom of why that self-harm started, then the chances are when the problem comes back again or it builds up again, then they will self-harm again.
So, I mean, if someone, oh, no, someone who is self-harming.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they're aware that they're doing it, but are they likely to reach out for support, or is it the fact that they almost get discovered doing it and that's when the support mechanisms kick in?
Yeah, I think generally it's when they are discovered. You know, if perhaps a parent notices that their child is harming themselves, that then usually starts the process for them. Teachers in schools, you know, safeguarding teams in schools and colleges and universities, you know, they're all being trained to be aware and to look out for signs of this. And once people start self-harming, it then becomes a bit of a stigma that they feel that they can't share that they are self-harming and that they need help. You know, and it becomes a bit of a vicious circle, really. So yeah, it's not an easy way out. It's like I said, it's once someone perhaps spots the signs, yeah, and actually then starts to deal with it correctly, that hopefully they can sort of find out what's been the problem.
So if there's somebody listening who is having that experience right now, they have realised that, let's just say it's a parent, for the sake of simplicity here, and they have realised, or they suspect, or they know that their child is doing this. Yeah. I mean, if it was me, I wouldn't know, one, what to do, or two, if I knew what I was going to do, I wouldn't know what the right thing to do. So what should they do? Where should they go?
I think the first thing is don't judge, because that would be, you know, generally as a parent, the first thing you're doing is why? What are you doing that for? Why are you hurting yourself? And, you know, all that sort of thing, which it's just support, you know, just being there and reassuring that this can be sorted and the situation that they are in now will not be there forever, which means that the self-harming situation won't be there forever. And sometimes that can give people reassurance that it's not just them that they're going through this. And then hopefully, with parents, in the parent situation, depending on the sort of relationship you have with your son or daughter, it's finding out what the problem is that they can't express out loud, that hopefully you can then sort of support them and get the relevant help accordingly. And we've mentioned it in previous episodes of this series, in that it could be something like bullying. Mm-hmm. And so let's say bullying, and they can't get away from it. They come home and it's still there, you know, the messaging, the Facebook, of this, you know, they can't sort of leave it at school, and it can become just overwhelming. And this is their only way. This is the only thing they've got control on. And it's having that sense of being in control which causes them to do the self-harm. So I would say if you've got a child that is going through that, it's not to overreact and just to reassure that this can be sorted and that, it, you know, there is help out there.
And would you recommend they go to their GP first of all?
GPs are fantastic. You know, I always say, you know, all the way through, we've always gone, go to your GP first. I would actually talk to the schools as well and the colleges, unis, and find out what support they've got, because a lot of them have got on-site support and they are used to dealing, sadly, with self-harm. Mm-hmm. And they can also offer support while the child is in the school, you know, between, you know, whatever the hours are. And they can be aware that they are struggling or that they are overwhelmed. And it could be overwhelmed with anger as well, low self-esteem, you know, painful memories. It could be anything. But at least if the school / education, you know, they're aware of what's happening, that's a really good place, you know, good place to start, as well as with the GP. And then obviously then it's a case of, you know, the counselling, and letting that young person have the space to actually talk about what's going on and what, you know, what's making them go down that route.
And, you know, and it's that I wanted to ask about, because I've just had a thought that, let's just say there is a young person,
yeah,
and they are self-harming and there's an underlying reason for that. As a parent, do parents, that counselling is confidential, and the parent may or may not be involved in that counselling. And I wonder to what extent parents might also have to accept that the child is receiving counselling, but for whatever reason, they don't want to disclose to the parents what the underlying problem is, because dealing with it is one thing. I mean, do parents have to accept that maybe they won't find out the root cause because, for whatever reason?
Yeah, and that does happen and can happen. I think if you're a parent and you're listening to this and you're going through this scenario, as you know, currently, I think you just have to think to yourself that, you know, how lucky that you have got a son or daughter who is able to talk to somebody, even if it's not you, about what is going on, because that's their safety valve. And I would say to anyone that telling someone that you're self-harming actually shows strength and courage. And everyone needs to be aware of that. To actually divulge that you are self-harming takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength. And you need to be congratulated that you actually have got to that stage where you are, you know, you are going to talk to someone about what's caused it or why. And, you know, so I think as parents, we just have to just go, okay, I'd rather they were talking to me, but if they can't talk to me, at least I know they're talking to a professional person who is giving them support.
And I mean, we said earlier, it's often assumed it's younger people who do this, and that isn't the case. So let's just now go the other way and think you have a friend, you're adults, and you have a friend, the support you can give to that friend. I mean, I'm assuming that's going to look very similar, isn't it?
It is. And I think actually with adults, it's less chance of actually being self-discovered by it, because adults have a good way of covering up, and have much more independence and privacy than, say, a teenager does at home. So it's going to be harder to establish if that person is self-harming, unless they are doing something like misuse of alcohol and drugs, or someone is getting into dangerous situations where they know they have a high percentage, they know they're going to get hurt. And obviously, if you're witnessing that, then that's the time to say, what's happening? What's going on? Why are you putting yourself in this situation? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're here to help. And we've also, you know, there's lots of people out there that can help.
It's a difficult issue. And I think, I mean, the one thing I wasn't expecting really is the variety of ways in which people might do this, because you're right, my assumption was cutting themselves. Now you've said the other potential ways, it makes perfect sense, but until you said it had not occurred to me. It's fascinating, it really is.
Another one actually, Andy, is also having unsafe sex. That's classed as self-harm.
Again, it's about putting yourself in dangerous
situations. So it's not necessarily the one that we all assume, you know, which is the cutting.
There's help out there, and we've mentioned before the GP is a place to start, but it's also worth mentioning that, you know, if people seek counselling outside of the NHS, then again, it's just worth reiterating, it's confidential and non-judgmental, isn't it?
Definitely, absolutely. And there's a lot of counsellors out there who are on all the Counselling Directory Registry or Psychology Today or BACP, NCS. You know, they're all safe places that they could go to actually source a counsellor and know that they're sort of registered, trained and able to deal with the situation that they're, you know, they're bringing to the counsellor. So yeah, there is that. And there's also, again, the charities out there, which are fantastic, you know, like Childline, Young Minds and Mind itself. They're all of these sort of charities are out there that can offer lots of help to friends, family of people who self-harm and vice versa.
Well, Carol Salter from Talking Minds Counselling, thank you very much. I found this really, really interesting, and I hope that someone listening has found it helpful and supportive. I'm sure they will have.
I hope so. But thank you, Andy.